And number two, Fidel Castro, the original Castro, was pretty smart. He was evil, but he was smart. But these asshats since then have just been incompetent. They're like three-wheel shopping carts. I mean, they're just incompetent. All they know how to do is oppress people. They take all their money and they give it to the military and the police and themselves. And to hell with the good people of Cuba. And that's not a model for success. And they're gone. And they just don't know it yet, whether we do it through an invasion or not. I'd rather do it the easy way, but that's kind of up to the communists who are running things.
What's the easy way?
This is my video update on this Thursday midday, May the 21st. Let's talk about some news. And before we get started with today's news topics, and we have got a lot of news to get to on this Thursday, I just want to say a quick thank you to everyone that likes this video. Thank you to everyone that is subscribed to this channel. Thank you to everyone that comments down below. I love reading everybody's comments, and I try to read as many comments as possible. And to everyone that hypes this video, I like it. I like it a lot. I like them hypes. Not exactly sure what the hypes do, but it sounds very cool. So thank you for liking. Thank you for hyping. Thank you for commenting and subscribing. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with the big news story for today, which is the indictment of the 94-year-old Raul Castro, former defense minister, former leader of Cuba, 94 years old, and he has now been indicted by the Trump DOJ. Maduro 2.0. That is what is going on here, right? The same playbook that was used against Maduro and Venezuela to justify the kidnapping of Maduro, the incursion into Venezuela, the kidnapping of Maduro. Where is Maduro anyway? No one is exactly sure. What an interesting bird. Beautiful. Anyway, all right, I got distracted there. I get distracted very easily. Maduro 2.0, the incursion into Venezuela, the kidnapping of Maduro. No one talks about where Maduro or his wife are at this moment. Are they undergoing any trial or where are they? What's going on with Maduro and his wife? But this the same playbook with Castro. You now have an indictment in the same way that you had an indictment on Maduro and a $50 million reward for the capture of Maduro. You now have this DOJ indictment, which was handed down on Wednesday. Widely expected indictment accuses Castro of ordering the shootdown of two American planes operated by anti-communist Cuban exiles off the island's coast in 1996. Cuba said at the time that the planes were connected to the U.S. Air Force and were warned to divert before they were fired upon. So this plane that was entering Cuba was some sort of an operation in 1996 called the Brothers to the Rescue. And it was a group of Cuban nationals as well as a couple of Americans. And they claimed at the time that this operation was about rescuing Cuban citizens and bringing them to the United States. And Cuba claimed that this plane was smuggling weapons into Cuba in order to stir up trouble. And at that time, Raul Castro was the defense minister, and Cuban fighter jets, they ordered the planes to turn back because they crossed into Cuban airspace, and the planes were shot down. And this is what the indictment is about. Yeah, Cuban authorities said they were involved. This plane, this operation was involved in smuggling weapons onto the island to be used by anti-government guerrillas. We're talking about two Cessnas 337 Skymasters were operated by Brothers to the Rescue, a group of anti-communist Cubans and Americans led by CIA operative Jose Basulto. The group's official purpose was to help dissidents to leave Cuba and to support the efforts of the Cuban people to free themselves from dictatorship through the use of active nonviolence. So that is the indictment, the shoot down of this plane and the death of those on board. In a statement earlier on Wednesday, Trump said America will not tolerate a rogue state harboring hostile foreign military intelligence and terror operations just 90 miles from the American homeland. Oh, wow. It sounds like the United States is preparing for some sort of an incursion or invasion into Cuba, if you go off of that statement from Trump. Rubio also issued a statement to Cuba in Spanish. So that was Rubio yesterday. We now have the indictment. I do believe we have a U.S. aircraft carrier is also in the region, if I'm not mistaken. But it does feel as if things are about to go hot in Cuba. The Trump White House posted on X an image: "Justice will be served, enemies of America neutralized," by President Donald J. Trump, with a picture of Maduro, of Khamenei, of al-Minuki, and Castro. And it says, indicted for Castro, killed, arrested. That's the image that the White House posted. Interesting that they include an image of an ISIS, al-Qaeda leader. While just the other day, al-Jilani al-Sharaa posted an image of Trump perfume, Victory 45 and 47, and thanked Trump for being such a good friend. Thank you for being a friend, President Trump, with the picture of Trump perfume. That was what al-Sharaa al-Jilani posted yesterday. I talked about this yesterday. And now the White House posts an image of another al-Qaeda ISIS person that has been killed, neutralized. And next on the list is Castro indicted. So that is the White House's messaging over just the last 2 days, signaling something about to happen in Cuba. They're very upset at the fact that Americans were killed in 1996 aboard these two Cessnas. They're not so upset about what happened to Gonzalo Lira in a Kharkiv prison. Where is the indictment of those responsible for American citizen Gonzalo Lira and his murder, his death? I don't see any indictments from the Trump DOJ. Anyway, we move on. We move on to, let's go around, to a possible meeting between Putin and Trump. Possibly meeting in November in China at the APEC summit, where Putin has confirmed his attendance. I believe the Trump White House has also confirmed the U.S. president's attendance. And of course, if they are both attending this summit in China, they are going to meet. Whether it will be an official meeting actually set up by both countries, or if it will be some sort of informal meeting on the sidelines of the summit, you can expect Putin and Trump to meet at the APEC summit in China. Ushakov said, "Our president has confirmed that he will come to the APEC summit. I think that in any case, if both leaders are in China, they will probably cross paths and hold some kind of meeting," he said. The Russian presidential aide added that, "So far, this has not yet been agreed, but given that such a prospect exists, it is unlikely that anyone would refuse it." Absolutely. Why would either side refuse this meeting whether formal or informal. And it's a good thing for Trump and Putin to speak, for the United States and Russia to engage in dialogue, something that Russia and the Europeans are not doing. Europe is searching for a negotiator, allegedly for some negotiator. Could be Merkel, could be Stube, Stupidity Stube, could be Mario Draghi, could be Kaya Kallas. But Trump and Putin do talk. Though the interaction between both presidents has been significantly reduced since the Valdai drone incident. We are getting reports that Witkoff also wants to visit Moscow soon. So maybe we're going to see more diplomacy, if you want to call it that, between the United States and Russia, because everything happening with Iran has resulted in no dialogue or diplomacy taking place between the United States and Russia, with the U.S. being the neutral mediator in all of this, of course, the United States being the neutral mediator between Russia and Ukraine. I don't think anyone believes that anymore. So Starmer, yesterday, the UK, they decided to roll back one of the sanctions that they have placed on Russia, the oil sanctions that they placed on Russia. They decided to roll it back because of a diesel and jet fuel crisis in the UK, the shortages of jet fuel and of diesel fuel. The UK decided, following up on Bessent's order to extend the 30-day waiver on Russian oil at sea. Bessent is always clear about that. He wants to make sure that everyone understands that this is Russian oil that is at sea, that has a waiver that can be purchased without any U.S. interference. But the UK pretty much did the same thing, and they issued some sort of a waiver on Russian sanctions, oil sanctions, and this drew a lot of criticism. Everyone was very upset with Starmer for doing such a thing. How dare you try to relieve some of the burden of UK citizens from the oil shortages by waiving sanctions on Russian oil? How dare you do such a thing, Keir Starmer? He heard it from Wes Streeting. He heard it from the conservative parties. He heard it from Boris Johnson, who posted on X, the Kremlin will, I am afraid, be laughing today at the incompetence and stupidity of the Starmer government. This is a betrayal of Ukraine and will do nothing to help British citizens. Boris Johnson, the man who will go down in history for traveling to Kiev in late October, early April, and sabotaging the peace agreement, the ceasefire agreement that was initialed by Russia and Ukraine back in 2022, that would have put an end to the conflict before it really started. That's Boris Johnson, and now he is upset that Starmer is going to pause Russian oil sanctions. How dare he do such a thing? The Kremlin will be laughing. I don't think the Kremlin really cares. There's so much demand for Russian energy and for Russian oil. Believe me, Boris Johnson, Putin and the Kremlin couldn't give a flying F about the UK waiving the oil sanctions. It's not going to make a difference for Russia. The oil will be bought at very high prices by somebody. That I can guarantee you. If it's not the UK, it'll be a dozen other countries lining up to purchase the Russian oil at prices above $100. Anyway, the pressure on Starmer was too great. The backlash was too great. And he had to roll back his pause on Russian oil sanctions. He had to roll it back. UK officials later acknowledged the rollout had been handled clumsily, with Trade Minister Chris Bryant apologizing for the confusion and saying the measure would be suspended as soon as possible. So they're going to roll back Starmer's pause of the Russian oil sanctions. They're going to continue the Russian oil sanctions to the detriment of the UK economy and to the detriment of UK citizens. Gotta please Le Goblin Ver. And how pathetic is Keir Starmer? He is so pathetic that he actually called up the Green Goblin to apologize and to say that the UK is still committed to Project Ukraine, remains committed to Project Ukraine. That is pathetic, man. He actually called up Le Goblin Ver to apologize. That is sad. Very, very sad. I am sorry, Le Goblin Ver, for even thinking about pausing sanctions on the sanctions we have on Russian oil. Please, please forgive me, Green Goblin. Okay, Mr. Starmer. I forgive you this time, but don't do it again. Right, Podolyak? Yes, Mr. President, you were very firm with the British Prime Minister. That is sad, man. What has become of UK leadership apologizing and groveling to Zelensky? That is sad. Anyway, let's move on. And we can talk about everything that is happening with Iran. Lots going on with Iran. Which way should we walk? Should we go up? Should we go down? Or should we go up? Oh, let's go down. It's a hot day. And I made a very stupid mistake. I did not wear shorts. Stupido. Anyway, let's discuss Iran. So Trump, he had a phone call with Netanyahu, according to Axios. And this was a very angry phone call with the Israeli leader. It got so hot, so heavy, so contentious, so much anger in this phone call that, according to sources speaking to Axios, and Axios has their sources, Netanyahu at one moment during the phone call was his hair was on fire. That is a direct quote from Axios for one of their sources. His hair was on fire, according to Axios. That's how angry Netanyahu was. Do you guys actually believe that? Do I cross? Ay, ay, ay. What is wrong with me today? All right. Liar, liar, your hair is on fire. Anyway. Netanyahu's hair was on fire. I said that three times, though. I'm trying to find my rhythm. The Axios article is, New Iran Peace Proposal triggers tense Trump-Netanyahu call. Very tense. So let me just summarize this Axios article. Basically, it claims that Trump wants to give negotiations a chance. While, I got 30 seconds. While Netanyahu wants to attack. That is the summary of the phone call. And according to Axios, Trump claims that the Gulf countries, they are working on some sort of an agreement. They're putting together what Axios calls a letter of intent. And if both sides agree to this letter of intent, which is based on the various proposals and plans that have been passed on by Pakistan to both the United States and Iran, then you're going to have a 30-day ceasefire. Negotiations would take place, and those negotiations would focus on those 30 days on the uranium enrichment, getting the uranium or the uranium dust. That's what the United States would be focusing on, and Iran would be focusing on getting sanctions removed and getting their assets returned, their frozen assets, their confiscated assets back to Iran, as well as agreeing to open up Hormuz and remove the U.S.-Iran blockade. So that is what Axios is reporting. That's the deal. That's what's going on right now at the moment. Trump claims they're very close to getting this letter of intent, and he wants to give it a couple of more days or a couple of more weeks. Netanyahu was furious. He wants an attack. And that's the call. Trump claims, according to Axios, that Netanyahu will do whatever I want him to do on Iran, though he also said they had a good relationship. And another source told Axios that Israel's ambassador to Washington had informed U.S. lawmakers that Netanyahu was concerned about the call. So basically, Axios is reporting that after the call, the Israeli ambassador started to contact people in Congress to tell them that he's not happy with what Trump is proposing. So he's basically telling people in Congress, the Israeli ambassador, to put pressure on the U.S. president and to get him to attack Iran. That is what Axios is basically saying here. This sounds to me like classic good cop, bad cop, doesn't it? Don't you get the feeling that this is good cop, bad cop? You know, Trump, the good cop, Netanyahu, the bad cop. And eventually, most likely, though I hope not, and an attack on Iran, some sort of a strike on Iran. Though I hope that that the letter of intent works out and we do get to negotiations and some sort of a settlement. But usually in these good cop, bad cop scenarios, you're trying to create the conditions for a strike against Iran while relieving Trump of his fault, right? You want to put it all on Netanyahu, at least for the U.S. Citizens, for the people in the United States. They can blame Netanyahu and not blame Trump. Trump can say, I tried for a deal. I really did. I gave them as much time as I could, but we had to strike. And Netanyahu was putting pressure. Israel was putting pressure on us to strike. That's what this sounds like to me. How about that New York Times article on Ahmadinejad, the one-time president of Iran, who during the first weeks of the war, it was claimed that he was killed in an Israeli strike at his home where he was under house arrest. But I believe he later resurfaced. He was hurt, injured during that strike, but he survived. And the New York Times put out a very, very bizarre article where they claim that the actual plan was not to kill Ahmadinejad, but that the U.S. and Israel, they had decided before attacking Iran that it was going to be Ahmadinejad who was going to be their guy. He was going to be the leader of Iran. And the claim is that that the strike was not about killing Ahmadinejad, but the strike was about freeing him from house arrest to kill his to kill the security around his house, get rid of all of the guards, and then he would be free, and he would assume power, he would take power in Iran. That's basically the plan. He was reportedly contacted, Ahmadinejad, before the war began, but the plan quickly fell apart after he was wounded on the first day when Israel struck his home in Tehran in what was supposedly an attempt to free him from house arrest. After the strike, he reportedly began distrusting his counterparts and has not been seen in public since. U.S. and Israel planned to install Iran's former president Ahmadinejad as head of state during early days of the war. Wow. Do you guys actually believe this? I don't know. It sounds pretty far-fetched. It sounds like they're saying Ahmadinejad is a traitor, right? I mean, he agreed with Israel and the United States on the attack against Iran, and then he was going to be placed into power as the president once the strike was successful in removing the guards around his house. That's what the article is saying. I don't buy it. I really don't buy it. Doesn't make any sense to me. It sounds like a pretty crazy plan if that is the case. Let's walk up. So an interesting article, nonetheless, from the New York Times. I wonder if they're trying to get Ahmadinejad in trouble, trying to stir up trouble and controversy for him. That's what it sounds like to me. Anyway, we have Ahmadinejad is back, right? We have Merkel is back. She returned and she got her European Order of Merit medal. Order of Merit. They love giving each other awards. They love it. They love conferences. They love awards. And Hollande is making a comeback. Yep. François Hollande is eyeing the French presidency in 2027. France's most unpopular president eyes a comeback. Hollande actually believes that he has a chance to become president in 20... Music. Music, music, too much music. Let's walk back down. Not gonna happen. Too much music. So Hollande believes he can become the representative of the socialists in 2027. Just to remind everybody, Hollande's approval rating when he left the presidency in France was at 4%. Even Macron has a higher approval rating than Hollande did. Even Macron. That's pretty bad when Macron has a better approval rating at like 10%. But Hollande was at 4%. He was awful. He was beyond awful. François Hollande. But the globalists are saying, why not? Why not bring him? Bring Merkel back. Bring Hollande back. Let's try to get Ahmadinejad in as president of Iran. Just bring them all back. Bring them all freaking back. Anyway, that's the news there. Should have been my clown world, but oh boy, do I have a lot of clown worlds. A lot of clown worlds for today. We can begin with the reports that Michael Bay, I believe he directed the Transformer movies, right? Did he direct the Transformer movies, Michael Bay? Or am I getting that wrong? Michael Bay is set to direct a movie on the two downed U.S. pilots in Iran. The two downed pilots in Iran. Remember the operation that allegedly the operation to extract the uranium, but it was an operation to save a downed pilot. But other analysis believes that it was really an operation to take out the uranium, U.S. Special Forces, and then the planes crashed, and it was a huge debacle. We really don't know the true story to all of this, to what happened in Iran on that day. But whatever happened, it was not good for the U.S. military. It was not good at all. Something bad happened. Something did not go as planned. And Michael Bay is going to now make a movie about this. He's going to direct a true story on the largest rescue mission in American history to save two drowned pilots in Iran. Yeah, multiple aircraft were destroyed in that operation. Was it to save pilots or was it to get the uranium? Which one was it? Okay, let's go down. Let's see if I can go down from here. I think I can. Can I? Let's go around. Let's go around. Oh boy, I'm walking in circles. Going somewhere, I just don't know where I'm going. So rumor has it that that Zendaya and Elliot Page are going to play the pilots. Just kidding. I saw that on X. I'm not coming up with that joke. That joke, and it's an excellent joke, is courtesy of Garbaggio, the dark Garbaggio. That's pretty funny. In reference to The Odyssey, right? To the rumors of the casting for Nolan's Odyssey. It's a good one. That's a good one. Just a joke. Just a joke, YouTube. Here's an interesting news topic. Not so much a clown world, but it caught my attention. Allegedly, Iran has put together an insurance company for ships to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. Man, Lloyd's of London is getting hammered, huh? They used to have a monopoly, the UK insurance business. Now with the sanctions on the Russian Shadow Fleet, I love that name, sounds so cool. Now with those sanctions, you have alternative insurance options. And now Iran is putting together their own maritime insurance option. And you can pay with Bitcoin. That's pretty cool. Pay with Bitcoin, get insured, cross through the Strait of Hormuz. Not bad. Not a bad idea at all. Interesting development there, huh? So now we turn to more clown world. And stunning and brave. She is big today in the clown world segment. Where to begin? So she was at an event, actually the event where she talked about how women in negotiations, when women negotiate, usually the peace treaty lasts longer. During that same event, we have a video that has now gone viral of Stunning and Brave explaining how China's economic policies are very much like a cancer. Now I want to be clear, because there's a lot of debate on X about what Stunning and Brave said. She did not call China a disease. She did not say that. So I want to be clear. In her statement, what she was saying was that China's economic policies, their coercive economic policies, are like a cancer. That is what she said. Their economic practices are a disease, specifically a cancer, to be more precise. So obviously this is causing a lot of controversy and a lot of discussion. And basically what she was getting at was that because China makes just about everything and trades with everybody, that the collective West is unable to compete. And the only way they'll be able to compete with China is if they join forces, if they pool their resources together and they join forces. If they don't do that, then your only options in dealing with China's economic policies and their trade policies is very much like a disease, where you either go the route of morphine or you go the route of chemotherapy. That was her analogy. That was her description of Chinese trade. Not China, but Chinese trade. So I will, well, let me play the video of what she said, and then you can come up with your own assessment as to what she was trying to say. Whatever she was trying to say, it was not good. You're the top diplomat of the European Union. You should not be talking in this way, and especially not against China's trade policies. Don't try to come up with what you believe to be clever, smart comparisons or analogies or stuff like that, because it's neither clever nor smart. So let me play you a segment of this statement from Kaya Kallas, and I'll be back.
Everywhere you go around the world, then everybody is worried about the Chinese coercive economic practices. And if you look at the numbers, I mean, you pointed out the batteries, the chemicals, even shipbuilding, how many, majority comes, critical raw materials comes from China. So if we take all the countries separately, then also including US and UK, Australia, all of us, Japan, Singapore, you name it, then also Latin American countries like Mexico, then together we can actually counter that economic coercive power that comes, but we are not doing that. And now I'm coming to your question, which is also in Europe. We have a very clear understanding of the diagnosis of the disease, mm-hmm. but we don't have agreement on the cure. Mm-hmm. And now, if I bring this parallel, I mean, if you have a very, very difficult disease, like you have a cancer, then you have two choices. Either you increase the morphine, or you start chemotherapy.
Clown rule number two is Kallas. I believe she's at the EU Parliament, and she was asked about the EU's Middle East policy. Where is our Middle East policy? What is going on? What are we doing in the Middle East as the European Union? We are a no-show. And Kallas's explanation as to why there is no EU policy when it comes to the Middle East is because she says, or she claims, that it's no use to formulate a Middle East policy when everything is still uncertain. She said there's so much uncertainty in the Middle East with the war in Iran that we don't need to. It would be a waste of time to create a policy position or a policy paper. The dog ate my homework. Where's your homework? The dog ate my homework. That would have been better. Policy on the Middle East? I think my dog ate it. No, she said it's just so uncertain that, why create a position? Why come up with a position or a policy towards the Middle East? A strategy towards the Middle East is what she said.
The EU Middle East strategy is in the working plans, but it's no point if drafting it right now when there's so much uncertainty. It depends very much how this war ends.
There's just too much going on in the Middle East to come up with a strategy at the moment. Let's see how everything's resolved, and then we'll come up with a strategy. Let's see who wins this thing, and then we'll come up with a strategy. Oh my God. Oh my God. Anyway, and finally, we wrap things up with Stunning and Brave on the drones over the Baltics, where she posted on X, claims that the Baltic states allow Ukraine to use their airspace are utter nonsense, and Russia knows it. Moscow's threats against the Baltic states are not a sign of strength, but of weakness. Russia is failing on the battlefield in Ukraine and is trying to intimidate us into reducing our support for Ukraine. The right response is to do the opposite, increase our support to Ukraine and boost Europe's defense even further, to do the opposite. Like George in that Seinfeld episode, I will do the opposite. Every instinct that I've had, every instinct that I've had has been wrong. So now I will do the opposite. Remember that episode on Seinfeld? Yeah, that is what Kallas is saying. What we need to do is the opposite. We need to escalate. We need to ramp things up. That is what we need to do. Not diplomacy. Not talking. Oh, my God. Lord, help us. Oh, boy. Yeah, so Russia's doing all of this. They're sending drones into the Ukraine drones. They're sending Ukraine drones into the Baltic states out of weakness. Out of weakness because they're losing. Because they are losing. If Russia was losing, then why is the EU scrambling for a negotiator? If Russia is losing, why are you guys trying to find someone to negotiate with Russia? Right? Is it the winner that scrambles to find a negotiator with the loser? Is that how it goes? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Putin said, I'm here. I'm ready to talk. Find someone to talk with me. I suggest Schroeder. And the EU is now scrambling to find a negotiator. Is that what the winners do? Okay. Okay. Whatever. Whatever. Anyway, she wants us to believe the narrative now coming out of the European Union, out of Kallas, out of Ursula, Estonia, and the Baltic states, and Finland. They want us to believe that the drones over Baltic airspace, over Finnish airspace, is Kremlin propaganda. Right. Because we don't have eyes to see what's going on. We don't have any critical thinking or any rational thinking to understand that the drones, the Ukrainian drones, are over your airspace. What are you talking about? You're scrambling fighter jets over Estonian airspace to shoot down a drone over Estonian airspace, a Ukrainian drone. You admit that it's a Ukrainian drone, and you admit that the drone is over Baltic airspace. What is there left to discuss? The whole thing is ridiculous. They're trying to gaslight us. That's Kallas. Let's end things with BlackRock Mertz. And he is now saying that everything is the Kremlin's fault. Yeah, Mertz's team, they've come up with the idea that to explain away his unpopularity and his falling approval numbers, that it is all part of Putin's grand plan. It's all part of Putin's master plan to weaken Germany. That is what the Mertz team is saying. That is what Politico is saying. Putin's trolls are weakening Mertz to boost Russia-friendly far-right. Right, to boost AfD. Right, I get it. I get it. So you kill two birds with one stone. You explain away Mertz's incompetence and his falling approval numbers, and you say it's the fault of the Kremlin, and then you tie in the AfD as well. Got it. Politico says Putin's strategy is to exploit Mertz's real and growing political weakness, particularly when it comes to German dissatisfaction over the economy, and to exacerbate divisions over Berlin's military support for Ukraine. To this end, the Kremlin's propaganda machine has portrayed Mertz as ineffective and detached, and has framed the Chancellor's refusal to restore energy ties with Russia as economic suicide. Moscow also casts the Chancellor's conservatives as reckless warmongers for backing Ukraine and refusing to negotiate with Putin to end the war. What about that statement is not true? What about that statement, Politico, is not true? Is Mertz not an ineffective and detached leader? Yes, he is an ineffective and detached leader. What's not true about that? That's true. That is true. Are Germany's problems, much of their economic problems, if all of their economic problems, does it not come down to bombing Nord Stream, the destruction of Nord Stream, and refusing Russian energy? Is that not the cause of Germany's economic deindustrialization? Yes, absolutely, that is true. And is Merz refusing to negotiate and wants to escalate? That is also true. So nothing in this statement is false. But they're claiming that this is propaganda. How can factual statements about what is happening in Germany be labeled as propaganda? Makes no sense. Anyway, that is the video, everybody. I will end it there. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on X. We are on Rumble. We are on Telegram. Go to the Duran shop. Pick up some merch. There is a link in the description box down below. I will see everybody tomorrow. Check us out on Substack as well. And once again, like, share, subscribe, and hype. And comment. Take care.